Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Okay, folks, you are listening to Planet Porky. And once again, we, and I say we, I'm going to introduce you to a brand new presenter, co-presenter with me in just a second. But we're going to bring you news from Planet Porky, the place where it's all at. I want to introduce and welcome Sam Stevens. Sam, great to have you on board.
Mike, it's an absolute delight to be here. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, thank you very much indeed. You've got a terrific voice, Sam. It's one of the reasons why you passed the audition and qualified to be on Planet Porky, okay?
Well, I know it's a very stringent audition process, Mike. I know you don't take, you don't suffer fools on Planet Porky.
I certainly don't. Absolutely
so,
right.
So, you know, it's great that you've offered me the opportunity to be here.
And in particular, we don't suffer juice heads on Planet Porky.
Quite right,
and,
too.
And can I tell you this already? When we went through the test reels, you know, of you talking in your audition, you have now been labelled Lord Snooty because of your rather posh voice. Where did your posh voice come from, Sam?
Thank you very much indeed. It's because of my very, very classy upbringing, obviously, in the suburbs of Wiltshire.
Suburbs of Wiltshire.
And I was brought up quite near Devizes Castle. Yep. So obviously I must be from the landed gentry of that part of the world.
Well, you must be indeed. I mean, do your parents come from good stock?
I would say my mum's from pretty good stock, my mother, but my dad, maybe not so much, but maybe I picked up some of my mother's good traits.
See. So your mother, aristocracy, your father from the peasant end of the lineage.
I'm afraid so. I'm not sure where she dragged him up from,
not sure your father would like that to hear him referred to as the peasant end of the lineage. But
well, I think
you
referred to him as that.
You come from a nice part of the world, Sam, because I know Marlborough very well, okay?
Oh, very nice. Yeah, very nice indeed. Now, good school down there.
Oh, yeah, great school.
Very good school.
I think the future queen went to Marlborough, didn't she? Kate?
Yes, she did. Yes, she absolutely did.
Is it Duchess of Cambridge?
That's the one.
Yeah, that's right. She went there. A few of my pals live around there. One in particular, a mate of mine who worked on the Daily Express out there.
Oh yeah.
We don't pay district reporters on national newspapers, or didn't in those days, enough money to send their children to Marlborough.
Right.
So his son, a great guy, went to, and I don't want to identify the boy for the sake of embarrassing him, but he went to the local comprehensive. Although they were in Marlborough, it was a little village outside called something, Ogbourne St Andrews or something
that. Very nice part of the world.
Yeah, that's right. It's on the road between Marlborough and Swindon once you've gone over the M4, obviously.
Yeah, you don't want to go anywhere near Swindon, though, do you?
No,
dreadful place.
Near Swindon, no. And point of my story is, so his lad went to the local comprehensive, got the most brilliant grades, went to St John's College, Oxford.
Oh, yeah.
Got the most brilliant degree in classics, right? The same subject that Bojo, our esteemed Prime Minister, studied.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And this lad was so bright, he didn't know anything about classics until he decided to go to Cambridge to study them. You know, he hadn't even studied them.
Oh, really?
At school. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just pick it up as soon as he got there.
Well, in the first year at St John's College, Oxford, he passed his Latin A level in 1 year.
Did he?
Which is normally like a 2 year or 3 year course or something like that.
He's either bright or a little bit sad.
Well, he's not sad. He's a good lad. He went into publishing eventually.
Right.
But what I discovered, you know, being a bit of a student of languages myself, is that when you ask a classic scholar, and Boris Johnson would be exactly the same, so what did Virgil say in this particular essay?
Oh, yeah.
Or what did Socrates say in that particular, you know, speech he made and all that? Because Latin is such a complicated language, it depends which way you interpret it. And nobody can actually tell you, you know, a lot of what the Latin texts mean, because they can be multiply interpreted.
So what you're saying is you can basically just make it up, and as long as you put some rhyme behind the reason, then people will say, well, fair enough, you're a scholar at Latin.
I went to the King's School, Chester. I had to do Latin at O level. I hated it. I mean, I really hated it. I mean, it was a pointless. It's a dead language.
It's a pointless subject. I totally agree.
Completely pointless, yeah. Anyway, that might be completely pointless, but of course, you are not pointless because you are on Planet Porky, Sam. And just to give give our listeners a bit of a background, Lord Snooty.
Yes.
You claim to be a Manchester United fan.
Yes.
But you're one of these Manchester United fans who doesn't live anywhere near Manchester. Please explain.
I'm afraid so. I'm afraid I live 300 miles away from Manchester. Well, maybe 200 miles away from Manchester, or at least did growing up. And was basically coerced into it while I was at school, because we had two sets of supporters at school. Yeah. One was the Liverpool fans, and one was the Manchester United
where
fans.
Where was this? In Devizes?
In Trowbridge, where I grew up, in Wiltshire. And unfortunately...
Did nobody support Swindon?
Not, well, there was the odd Swindon fan.
Right,
but I think people felt a bit sorry for Swindon. Bristol, a couple of Bristol City fans, Bristol Rovers fans, perhaps.
Supporting a Bristol team. No Bristol team's ever won anything.
No, you're right about that, I'm afraid.
No Swindon team. Oh, yes, Swindon have. Swindon won the League Cup in 1968.
They did indeed.
Don Rogers was the star of it, and they beat Arsenal, didn't they?
That's very good, I think that's right. Yeah,
I remember that. Yeah, well, we were big, when I say we, my team Everton, we were big in 68 because we'd won the Cup in 66.
Right.
We got to the quarterfinals in 67, and in 68 we got back to the cup final.
Right.
Got beaten 1-0 by West Brom.
Yes.
And Jeff Assel. So Wembley, in those days, by the way, Wembley was the shining light on the hill. I mean, the whole ambition of a football fan throughout the whole season.
Get to
Wembley at the end of the season. And if you won the FA Cup, you didn't get back from Wembley because we were 200 miles away, of course, on Merseyside until Sunday lunchtime.
Sure.
And it was the most spectacular and special event.
I miss Cup Final Day, though, you know. It's the joy of Cup Final Day. It's gone out the window now that there's so much football on TV, hasn't it?
Yeah, but you've got to remember, in those days, it was the only thing you ever saw live,
of course.
Football live. So, like you, as a kid, I'd get up at 9 o'clock on Cup Final Day and settle in, you know, with my bacon butties and my tea and stay there all day.
Watch the teams arriving and all that. It was brilliant.
Well, the teams in the hotel.
Yeah.
The teams on the coach. The teams arriving at Wembley. I mean, it's fantastic. But as we all know, it's not like that anymore because the world has changed so dramatically. Now, let's start with a controversial subject here, Sam, because you wouldn't describe yourself as a big boozer, really, would you?
Not particularly, no, not particularly.
In fact, I don't think I've ever bought you a drink, though. I've been in pubs with you several times, but usually, because of your varied working schedule, it's been early morning, and as a decent young man, you've stuck with the coffee rather than the booze.
That's right.
But look, I want to tell you about something which is getting to me, and I need a point of view from a rather younger perspective. Okay.
Yep.
Now, quite recently, a local pub of mine in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey, closed down for 3 weeks for renovations. Okay. And this is happening all over the place now. I see at least one pub at a time closing and reopening. When they close, immediately you think this is going to be converted into flats because real estate, you know, gets rarer and rarer as the years go by. And a lot of pubs, certainly in central London, have been turned into flats. And I fear it's going to happen in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey. However, the one I'm talking about closed down and there were just boards up all over the place. And eventually a sign went up saying, refurbishing your local, whatever the name of the pub was, you know, and back with you. And they gave a date. Okay. So they had a reopening party. And in fact, they asked me to give a speech. And I didn't because I'd done that twice before in pubs in Surrey.
Right.
And you just get a lot of abuse, really, from people. Do you know what I mean? Well, I don't like to be known. I know that sounds silly. I like to be known when I'm on the radio.
Right.
But if I go into a pub, I want to find the furthest away table right at the back, okay? Because normally I take my journals and I study the journals, you know, religiously and get through them. And I don't really want to talk to anybody. I don't like talking to people in pubs. And I never ever have eye contact with anybody. You see what I mean?
Right. I assume, though, if you've been asked to do a speech, that you were asked in advance rather than while you were sitting at a table quietly on your own.
Yes. I mean, I was asked weeks in advance for one I did.
Yeah.
And it was the area manager happened to be in the pub before it closed down.
Right.
Okay. This was one in a place called Epsom, right? And he spotted me and he came over and, you know, I'm a big fan and all that. I said, that's great. You love that. I love that. Anybody who tells you that, you know, even Z-list fame is a pain is mad.
Yeah.
Because it's great to be...
Everyone likes their ego massage, don't they?
Of course they do. And it's great to be acknowledged and it means that people are listening to you and all that.
Yeah.
So I said, yes, that's great. So he said, look. And I said, look. And what I normally do is I normally sort of pass them off to an agent, although I haven't got one.
How do you pass them off then?
I just say, maybe you should talk to my agency or something like that.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And they say, OK. And I say, I'll send you an address. And then I don't. But anyway, this guy was very persistent. And I said, OK. I said, let me. Now, the problem is, and I sound like a big head now, but I'm not a big head.
Right.
From that day to this, I've not been able to use that pub anymore because the minute I walked through the door...
Oh, overwhelmed with attention.
Well, not overwhelmed. People just want to be nice.
Right.
People want to be nice and people want to say, oh, hi, mate. But because for instance, you tell anybody you work for TalkSport, yeah, they will think you're an expert on football.
Yeah, they will, unfortunately.
Of course they will. And so, really, what's happening here? So the minute you walk into a pub, and this shows a lot of football, this pub I'm talking about, okay? Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely rampacked, you know, on a Sunday 4 o'clock, yeah. Saturday 12:30. That's the place to go if you want football, not just for the football, for the atmosphere, because it's a local pub and everybody gets in there.
Absolutely.
You know? And so I can't, I don't even like making eye contact with anybody, because now that I do a bit of TV as well, I mean, in the old days, to be honest, we were just a voice, okay?
Sure.
But because of the social networking and Twitter and the internet and all that, your face is as well known. I mean, Alan Brazil now is as well known facially. I know he's a famous footballer anyway, but as for the radio, you know what
I
mean?
Oh, social media has definitely changed that, no doubt at all. Yeah. Absolutely.
So I don't even like making eye contact. And when I walk into a pub now, if I discover a new one, because I do a lot of walking over the North Downs and the South Downs and all that.
Got to keep that heart going, haven't you? Eh?
I've got to keep the heart going, yep. Absolutely right. Yeah, yeah, only one third of it works, as you know.
Absolutely.
So I don't blatantly ignore people. I keep my head down as I walk in and I stare straight at the bar, clocking the sort of beer they've got in their pumps, right?
Right.
And I do not deviate my eye line to anybody sitting at the bar or anybody sitting at a table nearby.
Okay.
And that's the easiest way to, A, give over the message that I don't really want to speak to anybody.
Yeah.
But secondly, not invite conversation, because I am an unusual pub user. I don't go there for the company and I don't go there for, you know, the camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
I go there because I like drinking a couple of pints of beer with my journal, sit at the back and get left alone. Okay. So the point is, when I opened this one and they had posters all over the windows for, you know, it was closed for about 3 weeks. They had posters all over the windows in anticipation of the opening.
Not wanted posters with your face on there.
Like that.
That. Right,
just
right,
like
right.
That. Just like that. Come and meet, you know, Porky, right, Barry and
yeah,
all that kind
yeah.
of stuff.
Have you seen this man? All that kind of
yeah,
stuff.
That, yeah, that's right. You can meet this man on such and such a date. That's it now. I can't use that pub now.
Right.
And again, I'm not being big-headed. I'm just saying that my anonymity is completely blown. You see
right,
what I mean?
Right.
So point of my story is this, right? I don't like to get familiar with bar staff either, because if you do and start chatting to them, they then become over-familiar. And again, I'm not being big-headed, but if you walk into a pub and a bar person reaches for a pint glass and then starts pouring your drink, as far as I'm concerned, that's over. Once they start anticipating what you're drinking, you know what I mean?
Right, so the idea of being a regular doesn't appeal to you
exactly.
then at all. Right, okay.
I have
okay.
a rotation of pubs I use because I don't want to become a piece of the furniture in any pubs. By the way, there's a very strange phenomenon, and I'll get on to the real reason I've talked about pubs in a minute.
Yeah.
But there's a very strange phenomenon in the world now. I am now in early middle age, okay?
Right.
So I go into pubs sometimes, and the quality of pubs, by the way, is, I mean, 1,000,000% better than it was when I was 20 or in my mid-20s. Pubs were awful then.
Do you think it's the smoking ban that's sort of tidied the
I
pubs act up a bit?
I think smoking fans improved them enormously.
Yeah.
I think the fact that pubs have realised that the main money they can make is with meals in pubs. They've
yeah.
got to make them more attractive and more like a restaurant and great menus. That happens all the time.
Good prices, that sort of stuff.
Prices
yeah.
on all that kind of stuff, okay. And they're really nice places to go. And what was I getting onto this one for? Because what was I saying? I can't remember now. I was saying the pubs. Oh, yeah, talking about pubs. I'll tell you the real reason in a minute. But what I'm saying is that, no, I'm not sure why I strayed into. See, this is the. Oh, yeah, I know
You're
what I'm saying.
You're saying the pubs are nicer now than
they
used to
be. That's what I'm saying, yeah. Nice, early middle age. Right, the
yeah.
phenomenon I was telling you about, right?
Yes.
Now, this phenomenon is this. I go into some pubs, whichever one I go into now, there is usually about 3 or 4 or sometimes more men of retirement age, I would say.
Right.
Certainly about, but not late retirement age, not old pensioners. I'm talking about people who, for instance, might have been an ex-policeman who retires at 55 and he's about 58 or 59.
Okay.
Or an ex-fireman.
You can judge that just by looking at them, can you?
Well, you can judge really by people's fingernails.
Oh,
I see. And their haircut and the fact they haven't got any tattoos and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, right, okay.
You think they probably had some sort of professional job.
Dentist, something like that, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure dentists use pubs very much.
Do they not?
No, I don't think so. No.
Dentists don't use pubs. That's
I don't think
I've
so,
before.
No. No, I've never seen a dentist in a pub.
Do they drink
a pub?
Well, I have no idea.
No, yeah.
I've not seen no idea. I mean, I'm sure they probably like a drink, don't they, a dentist?
I mean, yeah, but I mean, funny enough, one time, you won't believe this, I was going to Kazakhstan, right, for an England game.
Obviously,
from Gatwick. And And the plane was delayed for about 12 hours.
Right.
So myself and... It wasn't Al who I went with. It was... Oh, remember, we once had a chap who ended up getting himself into a bit of a problem with bogus tickets.
Oh, yes, yeah.
He was my producer and tech op, and it was him and a couple of others.
Right.
And because of the delay on the plane, they said they'd let us into the hospitality lounge until the plane was ready to go.
I see.
But it took 12 hours.
Oh, right.
And the plane was initially due to take off at 8 o'clock at night, and we had to stay in the hospitality lounge all night, right. And so, or it might be the other way around. It might have been 8 a.m. to, yeah, that's right, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. or something like that, you know.
Is that because the pilot had no idea where Kazakhstan was? So I had to try and find it on the map before we took off.
Kazakhstan's like on the far side of, you know, somewhere. I mean, it's on the edge
of Russia. Near Russia, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it used to be part of the Russian Federation, yes, of course it did. Know what I mean? Yeah. So, anyway, the point of my story is, as I came out after 12 hours in the hospitality lounge, like this, you know, I'm now demonstrating for people who can't see me the wobbly walk that you get after
staggering around a bit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I walked straight, and then you had to go through the departure lounge. But it meant literally going through the, you know, had to go back through the sort of social area where the bars are and out towards the gate. And sitting there was my dentist.
Was he?
Mr. Cullen.
Right.
Yeah, honest to God. And, you know, he always thought I was a real sober chap, you know, because I never told him.
He thought that about you?
Well, yeah, because I never told him I'd drunk and all that. And he's done a lot of work in my mouth. I've had implants costing up to £5,000 three or four times, you know.
So he couldn't tell by the state of your mouth that you'd had a few pints in your lifetime then?
Well, he never said anything.
Oh, right, okay.
Never said anything to me, you know, and I never went. I always go to the dentist in the morning, so, you know, I've never indulged heavily the night before,
right.
You know, in deference to the dentist. You want to be breathing alcohol fumes all over him. So, he looked at me and I Mr. Colin, how are you? And then I dreaded next time I was going to go and see him for some dental work, you know. But I just told him that we'd been delayed 12 hours and I was tired and emotional, you know what I mean? Which is a word for, yeah. Anyway, getting back to why we're talking about this, right?
Yes.
Is the fact that I see these guys and they're either in their late 50s, early 60s. They sit around in bars and they talk to each other incessantly for hours and hours and hours, and that's all they do.
Right.
They're retired and then they go home. They don't get blind drunk late into the night. They almost treat it like a job. They're there as early as 11 o'clock. I know that because sometimes, you know, if I'm working early, very early or something like that, I might even go into a pub at 11 o'clock if I've started work at 4 a.m., you know what I mean?
Right, right.
And finished at 9 or 10 or something like that.
Or even if you haven't, you might go in there and...
it's nice of you to point that out. Thank you, Sam, for shredding my reputation with our millions of listeners. And you see these guys, it's like their job. They turn up, they take their coat off, put it on the back of the chair, sit down, order their drink.
Sort of executive drinking.
Yeah, they're sitting at bar stools, they're chatting to each other.
Well, aren't they just wasting time and not ordering all these drinks? Just sitting there drinking the odd pint here and there.
Well, yeah, but the landlords don't seem to mind.
Oh, right, okay.
They're getting a good six or seven drinks a day out of them, and there's four or five of them. They're quite a bit, but it's almost like a job. And then at about 4 o'clock, I've noticed, if I've been there in the afternoon, they put their coat back on and it's cheerio to everybody and they go home. And I can't imagine life like that. It'll bring us onto the subject of retirement pretty soon.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Right, okay, folks, just to remind you, you are listening to Planet Porky. Delighted to be able to introduce Sam Stevens, or Lord Snooty, as he's known amongst some of us, because of his very posh voice and his ability to hold himself in good company. Now, I'm rambling on about pubs, Sam. Before I tell you my next tale, I want you to tell me what your social drinking habits are. Are you familiar with the pubs in your area?
Well, I am very familiar with the pubs in my area, although not so much recently because I've recently moved to a new area. But in my local establishments around where I grew up.
Yeah.
I'm certainly very familiar with them.
Really? But you're not a boozer, are you?
Not particularly, but, you know, used to be back in my youth, of course. And nowadays, when I'm working the hours that I work, it's very difficult to be a regular boozer, you know what I mean? Actually, just last Friday, we had a bit of a big booze up around the local area, around by work, so it was very nice indeed.
Are you talking about in London?
Yes, around London, where there's quite a few hostelries around there that we sort of frequented and had a few drinks. So it was
Was that a leaving do or anything like that?
Not at all, actually. No. It was just a sort of one of these. You know, it gets more and more difficult to organise these things with people because people are flakes, you see, Mike.
Yeah.
Most people can't be bothered to turn up. And when they do, you know, it's a very good night. But you end up finding that half the people that originally were invited that said they were going to come don't bother turning up. And then, therefore, you kind of wasted your time. And you've got to try and organise these things months in advance, unfortunately. But it ended up being a good night after all. And there was enough people there to make it worthwhile.
How many drinks would you normally have on a session, if you see what I mean?
If it was a heavy session.
And by the way, I'm not encouraging you.
No, well, I reckon I would probably start off with a few beers, and then by the time I've had too much beer, it doesn't go down very well. So then I'd move on to the spirits after about maybe 5 or 6 pints, and then kind of stay on the spirits for the rest of the night, and however many that was, you know what I mean?
That's robust, because these days I can only drink about 4 pints.
Right.
And I drink bitter, because I think it's less fizzy than lager.
Yes.
And it weighs less on my stomach.
I don't like the fizz.
I mean.
The fizz isn't good.
No, good. So I might have 3 or 4 pints. Then I have to move on to red wine. But I think my favourite drink is becoming gin and tonic.
Is it?
Of the large variety, with plenty of ice, fizzing, with a twist of lemon or lime in it.
Right.
And I find that very refreshing. But it's very easy to drink a lot of that.
Right.
It really is. You know what I mean? It's also very expensive. A large gin and tonic in central London
is... that'll set you back a bit. Yeah.
£12. Oof. Yeah, seriously.
You don't want too many of those a night, do you?
You don't want too many of those a night.
Is it hangover-inducing, a gin and tonic?
Not really. No, gin and tonic keeps my head clear.
Does it?
Keeps my head quite clear. But I am not a, you know, contrary to popular belief, I'm not a big boozer anymore under any circumstances, and I prefer to leave that to the younger generation. Now, the original story I was going to tell you about pubs, right, in this particular episode, that's me clapping my hands, folks, in a gesture of let's get on to the beef in the sandwich, so to speak. And that is this, and it's going to be controversial, so I need to get this from a younger perspective. I've told you about the pub that closed down for 3 weeks. It opens again. All the regulars come in for the opening party, and I didn't open this one because I didn't want the experience to be that I would get too well known, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So I didn't open it at all, and I took my normal table at the back. However, I noticed, not that I had any sort of lustful interest in what I'm going to tell you,
right,
but there was a beautiful barmaid there before the pub closed down, and people are now going to accuse me of being sexist.
Yeah, here we go. This is it.
But I'm not. Right. I'm not. I'm telling you, this lady was so attractive. She was from Estonia.
Right.
She had, lovely dark hair. She was exceptionally pretty. She had a wonderful figure and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And what's more, coming from Estonia, I think there's a feeling of people in that part of the world. They were suppressed for so long, you know, and it's part of the USSR, right? Her parents, for instance, would never have been allowed out of the USSR.
Right.
And certainly would never have been allowed to express themselves the way that this lady did. But, I mean, she was voluptuously beautiful in every way, you know, long fingernails, beautiful clothes, accentuated her figure. I mean, an absolute, one of my colleagues at work might call a darling. You see what I mean?
So even though you don't pay any attention to anyone around you at the pub, you pay plenty of attention to her.
You couldn't miss her.
Right.
If you were a heterosexual male, you couldn't miss her, okay, without a shadow of a doubt. And so the question I'm putting to you is, do you think it's wrong for pubs to employ good-looking bar people? Because you go to, say, the Northern Quarter in Manchester, which is the gay part of town.
Right.
You will notice if you go into a bar there, all the bar people are very good-looking, okay?
You spend a lot of time around there, have you?
No, but I go back to Manchester occasionally because I used to work up there on the Daily Express.
Oh, of course,
And funnily enough, you being a Manchester United fan, last time I was there, I went to Old Trafford to watch Everton play, you know, and I might stay over and I might meet my mates, and we do go to the Northern Quarter. You know, it's a very lively part of town, you know. Although, as I say, I'm heterosexual. What's that matter? You know what I mean? And so anyway, what I'm saying is, when the bar reopened, said lady, who I don't really want to name because it'd be a bit unfair,
right,
didn't appear for the first couple of days. So there was a collection of people coming up to the bar saying, where is, you know, said lady?
Yeah.
And to be told she'd gone back to Estonia. Oh, why? Oh, bit of worry about Brexit, where will it all end and all that. She wants to go back to Estonia to establish her place there. But then if Brexit sorts out, she wants to come back. Oh, is she coming back here? Well, we don't know. Trade went down by about 50%. because she was one reason. It's a good part of the country. It's Stockbroker Belt, Surrey. So you've got loads of local guys like estate agents, insurance brokers, people who run, you know, local businesses,
yes,
the dry cleaners and all that, would all flock to this pub for a number of reasons. One, it was a nice pub.
Yep.
Two, you know, it had a nice ambience about it and all that kind of stuff. It was in the middle of their town. But one reason, without a shadow of a doubt, was for the lady behind the bar, who everybody, you know, really loved. You know what I mean? And do you think that's wrong for a pub to try and sell itself on the quality of its bar staff?
Well, I mean, I suppose it depends on how blatant it is, really, isn't it? I mean, when I was in New York very recently in April, I remember I deliberately made a stop at Hooters, which is obviously a very well-known bar in America.
Well, I mean, that is much more sexist than anything I've been talking about.
Well, I mean, I don't know what you want to call it sexist, but certainly they know what their business model is, don't they? Let's put it that way. It's employing very, very attractive people behind the bar, and in the encouragement
waitresses
that,
as well.
Well, exactly, yeah, and waitresses in the hope that it'll encourage more
topless,
people to come
are
in.
They?
No, not at all. They are very, very modestly dressed.
Yeah, but I wouldn't go to a topless bar, by the way.
No, well,
I think it's so insulting to a woman. You know what I mean?
Sure,
anyway,
sure.
Go on.
But anyway, I think that if you're being completely blatant about the fact that you're advertising that you've got very attractive people behind the bar, it's probably a little bit. Probably it's not very woke, is it, in these modern times?
No.
But I do think that there's certainly, as long as you're sharing the wealth when it comes to not just women, it can be some attractive men, like you've already said, then I don't see a problem with it.
Yeah.
I think it's a good, I mean, the pubs now have got to try and start encouraging business to their to their places, haven't they?
I mean, you
cannot possibly be functioning nowadays without trying to do all you can as a pub. I mean, pubs are, like I've just said, going out of business left, right and centre.
Yeah.
You know, they're turning into real estate, all the rest of it. They've got to do everything they can to possibly sustain themselves.
Yeah.
And I would have thought that employing bar staff that are at least presentable, if they're not necessarily classically attractive, then at least incredibly friendly and very attentive.
Yeah.
That's what you want. I mean, the trouble is, in Britain particularly, or England, you go to so many places whereby you get rude staff, rude service, poor service.
Yes.
I mean, if you're not going to get people who are, you know, classically beautiful or attractive from male or female perspective, then the least you want is people who are very nice and friendly and attentive and you know, look after you and all the rest of it. But you don't tend to get that where you go. So if they're attractive and not very friendly, then I think it's a bit of a waste of time. But if they are still doing, the first thing they do is they're good at their job, then I don't see a problem with it.
I tell you where it used to fall down in the old days. Before we understood mutual respect between men and women, okay? And before women's lib, and I don't mean the Me Too movement, I'm talking about the realisation that women should be treated as equal partners in society. What used to happen in the old days, and I'm talking about the old days, I'm talking about like 30 years ago, is that a gaggle of men would gather at the bar and then start giggling and making silly, sexist comments. You know what I mean? You know, something like, that's a nice pair. Oh, yeah, have you got any fruits? And all this kind of stuff. You know,
pull the other one, all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Pathetic, childish, you know, ghastly comments like that about a woman. And, unfortunately, in those days, if the barmaid wanted to keep a job, she had to not just accept it, but sometimes encourage it.
Sure.
Now, that never happened with the lady I'm talking about, whose name, by the way, was Chrissy.
Oh, you don't want to name her, but you're going to name her anyway.
I thought I would, just to pay tribute to her, because she was, by the way, a great barmaid as well. She would make sure, as I've noticed with a lot of East European workers in this country, that your drink was perfectly served, that nothing was splashed on the bar as she served it to you, that if she came to your table and she saw a dirty glass, she'd take it away. If she saw some peanut dust on your table, she'd wipe it with a cloth and all that.
Undeniably, there is a work ethic from some of the people from Eastern Europe which we should be ashamed of in this country that we don't match, I think, at times.
I totally agree with you. She would do things like, if I complained, for instance, in the summer it was too hot, she'd say, leave it to me. And within seconds, she'd come and she'd get the doors opened and keep them open. You know what I mean?
Right.
If I complained that it was too cold, because she'd open the doors on an autumn day or a spring day, she'd say, don't worry. And she'd come and then she'd close all the doors. And all that kind of stuff. She was very receptive to the needs of her customers. She was first-class barmaid, apart from being very good-looking. And
did she know what you liked to drink?
Well, you see, yes and no, because again, I always keep people guessing what I want to drink.
Right.
When I've had two or three pints, I might order a gin tea, or I might have a glass of red or a glass of white.
Right.
I have what I call a drinks menu, and that is, it's usually three or four pints of beer.
Right.
And then it would be a glass of red.
Right.
Like a Merlot, large one. And then a large Pinot Grigio.
Right.
White. I like red and then like white, but I don't like drinking all red because the tannin's too strong.
I see.
And I don't like drinking all white because the acidity gets my stomach. You see what I
see,
mean?
I see.
So I will then drink red and white, red and white. And then if I'm fed up with wine, get onto the G&Ts, okay?
So is this drinks menu something you sort of hand out to all the local staff? Is it hand-designed, you know, that you sort of draw it up for all the the local hostelries in the area?
No, it's in my head.
Right, right.
It's in my head, and I know what I'm doing. But, I mean, that makes me sound like I'm a bit of a sort of, you know, amateur alcoholic. I'm not.
Professional.
No, that's a bit harsh. No, what I'm saying is that might be on a day when I've maybe... Sorry, what are you laughing at?
Sorry.
What?
No, nothing, carry on.
Really?
Yeah, no, you're making me laugh. It's
no,
good.
Oh, I see. You just laugh at...
Getting into the spirit of things, yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that some days, I mean, you and I work extraordinary hours.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And sometimes I've finished work these days maybe 9 o'clock,
right.
You know, in the morning or something like that, having started at 4, something like that. And I make no bones about the fact I'll go to a bar if it opens at 10, but I'd only stay till 1 or 2 o'clock.
Right.
However, sometimes if I've worked till 1 o'clock, right, I don't know why, but the metabolism has changed. I'll go to the half one. I might stay till 6 or 7.
Right.
That's when I would go through my menu of Boozerama, interspersed along the way with something to eat. Okay?
Right, I see. Yeah. Very usually. Important to eat.
It is very important to eat because otherwise you'll do your stomach in. So that's the, you know, that was the main issue I wanted to get to. Now, the other thing is I've seen this report for one of my journals and it says baby boomers, the biggest boozers. I'll drink to that. A man called Roger Lewis, an expert on food and drink. It's hardly a proud boast, but the baby boomer generation has at least something to teach those sober snowflakes. Now, would you, this is a headline I'm reading. You wouldn't regard yourself as a sober snowflake.
I'm probably closer to the sober snowflake than I am the boozing baby boomer, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, as I said, you see, the amazing thing is, Sam, I don't suppose you own your own property, do you?
No.
I don't. I can well understand that because I know very few people your age who do.
Particularly not in this part of the world, unfortunately.
Of course not in this part of the world. Now, when I was your age, I was lucky enough to be able to buy property about... I would say 1/5 of the price that you would have to pay these days. I bought my first place in Manchester very cheaply, £20,000 when I was earning £12,000 a year.
Right.
You imagine trying to buy a property for less than twice your salary.
Yeah.
Imagine that, right? Now, A, it was in Manchester, it wasn't in London. B, it was 35 years ago, okay? Young people got no chance whatsoever these days. I mean, what happens to young people who want to buy but can't? Do you feel you're trapped?
Yeah, massively so. I mean, it's almost impossible because of the fact that, like you just said there, wages have gone up in one sense and house prices have gone up exponentially in another sense, and therefore it's absolutely impossible to get on the housing ladder.
I totally agree. And have you got a plan on what to do with it? Will you go to the bank of mum and dad?
There's an element of that, I think. I mean, you know, obviously being from good stock, you know, there's a little bit of, there might be a little bit from time to time if I ask nicely, a bit of money sloshing around, but very little. I mean, not sort of grand sums, just occasionally, you know, if I ask nicely.
No.
And otherwise, you've got to wait for someone, you know, relative to dial something before you get any money. You know what I mean? It's awful.
I really feel for young people. And that's what I say about baby boomers are the biggest boozers. We've got lots of disposable income. I mean, lots and lots of it. We were also lucky enough to be able to get pensions. When I first started working on the Daily Express, right, it was a non-contributory pension fund, and if you worked for, I think you worked for something like, it's a long time, 40 years.
Right.
You started at 22 and finished at 62. You then got a final pension payout for the rest of your life of 2/3 of your final salary.
Right.
It was amazing, utterly amazing. Now, I never did it for 40 years because I moved jobs so often. But the one place where I worked 13 years, the Express, I get a fairly decent pension now from that, believe it or not. And I don't quite know why, you know what I mean? So we've got lots of disposable income and I feel really sorry for young people who can't get onto that property ladder.
I must admit, I do feel a little bit envious about people of the older generation who say, oh, I've paid off my mortgage. My mortgage was a tiny, £60,000 of the house I bought or whatever it might be, you know, or with less than that, £20,000. You think to yourself,
if you took out a 25-year mortgage when I was 25, A, it would have been paid off by the time I was 50.
Yeah.
And B, by the time I was 50, it would have represented about 10% of my monthly salary.
Yeah.
Because the property was so cheap in the first place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we're a golden generation in terms of we've been so blinking lucky and so fortunate. And I don't forget that. I mean, in contrast to that, so that means I've got property that's worth, you know, a lot of money, because I invested in it as well along the way. So I'm very, very fortunate, very lucky.
It also means that landlords are doing very well out of it, because, of course, the rental market's gone up, absolutely skyrocketed to a certain degree, in certain areas particularly.
But politicians have got very envious over the last couple of years.
Right.
They hit us with real taxes.
Oh, right.
I mean, any rental income that a landlord takes now on a buy-to-let is taxed to start off with at 50%.
Is it?
Oh, yes. And, of course, you're paying service charges, you're paying local taxes and all that kind of stuff. So
you're not actually making as much as it seems on top of the face of it that you are making out of it.
There's two ways to make money out of property. One is to rent it out and hope you get a good rental for it, okay? But the second one is hope that it accumulates in value over the years.
Right.
And I can tell you, a lot of the property I bought in the last 10 years has not accumulated at all.
Right.
Because the property market, apart from London, property market just levelled out. But any property I bought before that, I did very well on, and I was very lucky. So the point I'm making is that, just to compare that, I've got a niece now, right? And fortunately, I've got a family who've done well because of my generation.
Yeah.
I've got two sisters and two brothers-in-law, and you know, my mum did okay, because, God rest her soul, because she had a house in Bournemouth, which was bought years ago. And so we're able, I know this is going to, you know, you're going to faint when I tell you this, Sam. We were able to come up with £350,000 towards, you know, helping a member of our family get a place in London, which cost £600,000.
Blimey.
I know. But that's five or six
eye-watering figures.
Exactly. But without it, there was no way on earth it was going to happen. You know what I mean?
Of course, yeah.
So that's the way it is. Okay, folks. Well, listen, that is the latest Planet Porky. It's the debut for Lord Snooty, otherwise known as Sam Stevens. I think you'll agree that man's got a beautifully, velvetly toned voice.
Can I use the word mellifluous?
Mellifluous I love, but I can never pronounce it.
Oh, okay.
I was going to use mellifluous, but I go mellifluous, you see what I mean?
So thank you very much.
Out of my mouth, but it's great. And what I want to say to all you folks is out there that now that Sam has joined the Planet Porky team, there's a roster of us, of course, Leslie Ann Jones and Ben, the archer, and now Sam, please let us know what you think about it all. You can, you know, you can tweet us. Sam, what's your Twitter address?
I'm at SamStevens71 on Twitter. You
can get me there. SamStevens71 on Twitter. Or you can obviously get to me, you know where I am and all that. Or, Sam, as you set up my Gmail account, perhaps you could tell the listeners what that is as well, please.
Yes, you can get the podcast at planetporkypod@gmail.com if you'd like to communicate with Mike or anyone else on the show.
Or Sam or anybody else. So we'd love to hear from you. Okay, folks, thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back with you again very soon. I go into some pubs, whichever one I go into now, there is usually about three or four, or sometimes more, men of retirement age, I would say.
Right.
Certainly about, but not late retirement age, not old pensioners. I'm talking about people who, for instance, might have been an ex-policeman who retires at 55 and he's about 58 or 59.
Okay.
Or an ex-fireman.
You can judge that just by looking at them, can you?
Well, you can judge, really, by people's fingernails.
Oh, I see.
And their haircut. And the fact they haven't got any tattoos and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, right, okay.
You think they probably had some sort of professional job.
Dentist, something like that, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure dentists use pubs very much.
Do they not?
No, I don't think so. No.
Dentists don't use pubs. That's
I don't think
heard
so,
before.
No. You go to, say, the Northern Quarter in Manchester, which is the, you know, the gay part of town.
Right.
You will notice, if you go into a bar there, all the bar people are very good looking, okay?
You spend a lot of time around there, have you?
No, but I go back to Manchester occasionally,
right,
because
right.
I used to work up there on the Daily Express.
Oh, of course,
and,
yeah.
And funnily enough, you being a Manchester United fan,
yep.
Last time I was there, I went to Old Trafford to watch Everton play, you know. And I might stay over and I might meet my mates, and we do go to the Northern Quarter. You know, it's a very lively part of town, you know. Although, as I say, I'm heterosexual. What's that matter, you know what I mean? I know what I'm doing. But, I mean, that makes me sound like I'm a bit of a sort of, you know, amateur alcoholic. I'm not.
Professional.
No, that's a bit harsh.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.